but the way you act, you never would know it's there. Now, baby, time's a wasting, a lot of kisses I ain't been tasting. I don't know about you, but how am I gonna get to my share?
This is 90.1 FM KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio.
You can respond to the 2020 census by mail, phone, or online. Those who have not responded by May will be visited by a census worker. Official census workers must present a Department of Commerce photo ID with a watermark and expiration date. If asked, they must provide supervisor contact info, a letter from the Census Bureau, and may be carrying a laptop or bag with a Census Bureau logo. More info at census2020kc.org. Support for KKFI provided by the Metro KC Census Equity Fund.
Here at KKFI, we're making do as we can with the crisis going on. So for that reason, I'd like to play an encore presentation of one of our past Arts Magazine programs. So please, it's a little out of date by a week or so, but please sit back, relax, and enjoy this encore version of the Arts Magazine show, and we'll be back with you with live programs just as soon as we can. Thank you.
The views and opinions of this program are those of its host and guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and opinions of 90.1 FM, KKFI, Midcoast Radio Project, or its staff and volunteers.
Everything about it is appealing. Everything the traffic will allow. Nowhere could you get that happy feeling when you are stealing that extra bow. There's no people like show people. They smile when they are alone. Yesterday they told you you would not go far. That night you opened and there you are. Next day on your dressing room they the scenery, the makeup, the props, the audience that lifts you when you're down, the headaches, the heartaches, the backaches, the flops, the sheriff who escorts you out of town, the opening when your heart beats like a drum, the closing when the customers don't come. Word before the show has started that your favorite uncle died at dawn. On top of that, your partner has parted. You're brokenhearted, but you go on. There's no people like show people. They smile when they are low. Even with a turkey that you know will fold, you may be stranded out in the cold. Still, you wouldn't change it.
Well, hello and welcome to this edition of the KKFI Arts Magazine show. I'm Michael Hoag, your host. Glad to have you with us on this Monday here in the city as you listen to the Arts Magazine show right here on KKFI 90.1 FM, your community radio station. Right here in Kansas City, a couple of interesting things to bring your way today on the program. We're going to start talking with our friends out in Parkville, Missouri, where the Bell Road Barn Theater claims to be the oldest community theater in the area. That other barn theater claims the same thing. I don't know who to believe. But the Bell Road Barn people are with us once again. And they are presenting the show Men on Boats, with an all-female cast. So actually, it's all women on boats here to tell us all about it. I'm sure there's a story behind there, and I certainly want to hear it. That's right. The director of the show, Diane Bolin, is with us. She's an actress as well as a director and has even written things on occasion. What is there about directing, Diane? You have all the control.
Having worked both on stage and backstage and up in catwalks, running follow spot, I feel like I have a good grasp of how to put all the elements of theater together, and that's what I enjoy the most about being a director.
What was your last performance as an actress? The only one I can think of is the one over at Theater for Young America, where you were kind of a wizard.
Last summer I got to play Mrs. Who in the production of Wrinkle in Time, and that was a lot of fun, and I've done numerous shows for them over the years.
Also with us, Nadine Civitello.
You got it.
I'll probably pause every time to do that.
So.
You play the role of John Colton Sumner.
I do.
In the show. So it's called Men on Boats, but it's an all-female cast. I'm sure there's a story there. I'm hoping that there is.
Oh, there's
anyway.
Definitely a story. Yeah.
Well, let's hear it. What sparked Diane to want to direct this? Was it the unusualness of that aspect?
Yes. I was... Asked or told that this play was going to be produced by Bell Road Barn Players, and I should probably apply to direct it. So I gave it a read, and I was fascinated by Jacqueline Backhouse's, the playwright Jacqueline Backhouse, her method of this historical storytelling.
And it's written to be played by women.
Absolutely. Actually, I brought the note on casting from the playwright herself, and she says, "The characters in Men on Boats were historically cisgender white males. The cast should be made up entirely of people who are not. I'm talking about racially diverse actors who are female-identifying, trans-identifying, gender-fluid, and or non-gender-conforming." And in other words, I think... it's important now as we perform theater that we are mindful of telling stories that are universal and that can be told by people who are not white, cis, het males. It seems like all of history is told from that through that lens, from that perspective, and it's refreshing to see history portrayed by people other than that.
As I understand it, it's based on actual events. How true to actual events do you think it is?
There was an expedition in 1869. John Wesley Powell and nine men traveled down from the Green River down into the Colorado River and through the Grand Canyon. And it was about almost four-month journey. Not everyone stayed on the expedition throughout the course of those 3 to 4 months. It was from about May to August of 1869. So those events are portrayed. The people who decided to leave the expedition for different reasons, the obstacles that they faced throughout the trip, the obvious infighting that occurs when there are differences of opinion as to how to carry on the excursion.
It's quite a massive place. I've had the luck, I guess, of visiting the Grand Canyon in my time, and I remember how rough those Colorado River waters were as they traveled through the canyon. If you think about it, that river, over millions of years, carved out the Grand Canyon.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's gorgeous. And it's noted in Powell's journals, all the wonderful natural features that they witnessed and that they experienced.
Well, let's talk about to Nadine now. And talk about her character, John Colton Sumner. What interested you about this role to play? And tell me about Mr. Sumner. I guess I should say it that way.
You know, the longer we do rehearsals, the more I find that John Colton Sumner and I are very similar. He loves just go out and explore, try new things, do it just because he could. And I think that's very similar to me as well. He also tends to kind of stand back and watch what's happening more instead of getting in all the drama, which is kind of nice. So I like to think of him as a sit back and watch it burn type character.
Do we want to talk about the characters? And obviously there was a chain of command and
well,
all
sure,
of that. How did that work?
Well, so Powell was in charge of the expedition. brought on people that he had worked with in the past, or groups of men who had worked together in the past brought on new people. So there was a variety of people who went on this expedition, from seasoned explorers, hunters, obviously you needed a map maker, you needed a cook, soldiers, ex-soldiers who had just fought in the Civil War, to people who were just there more for a joyride and for wanted the adventure.
It's a lot of work for a joyride.
Yeah. So various levels of experience and things that they could contribute to the group.
Explorations were not unusual back in that time. They had a lot of the country to explore. I just find had to have been a treacherous trip.
Oh, yeah, absolutely, absolutely. And those are absolutely depicted in the play, the going down the rapids several times, overturned boats, loss of supplies, 10 months' worth of food dwindling down to next to nothing, all the conflict and drama that goes along with that.
How many people were involved? It's hard to tell from your cast, but how many people were involved in the actual expedition?
It was an actual expedition of 10 people.
10 people.
So, and all 10 characters are portrayed in the play.
Okay, we're speaking with Diane Boland, the director, and Nadine Civitella.
Yeah, there you go.
I had to look, though. And we're talking about the Barn Players production of Men on Boats, which, as Diane explained, is an all-female cast and was designed to be that way. Do we know from the author why she wanted to do this?
Other than the notes on casting provided in the script, not necessary, but I think it's relevant in today's society. We discussed on day one of rehearsal the power or the role of women in our society and the big what if question. What if we were in a matriarchy instead? What if we were afforded the same opportunities and access to leadership roles? Education, chances for job advancement. If we were given the same opportunities, would we rule the same way? Would we lead the same way? Would we have the same infighting, pettiness, greed amongst a group of 10 people than an all-white male group? Would we face the same obstacles and struggles or deal with them differently? And that's the kind of things we're exploring.
Within the context of the
within the context of the story, yeah.
Well, since these were all based on actual people, I assume there was such things that involved with these gentlemen in the show. But do you want the ladies that are in the cast to portray it the same way it is thought that the men would have done it?
We've experimented, a lot of different ways, looking at different takes on how we would be in certain situations as leaders.
Well, let's look at, you're here, Nadine.
I'm here.
So let's look at John Colton Sumner, for instance. What kind of a man was he?
I think he was a brave man, willing to just jump in with both feet and then try it, deal with the consequences, and figure it out at that time.
Was he, I don't know, how did he fit in? As far as what was his duties on the expedition?
He was brought along mostly as the expert. He'd been out traveling. He knew how to trap, hunt, and survive kind of precarious situations. So he was there to just make sure they got it done.
What was the big bone of contention involving your character? Or was there more than one big bone of contention?
You know, from what I'm reading with my study of the character, is he was okay with how things were going. He didn't necessarily get into the arguments of who's in charge and whatnot. He just tried to make things go smoother. If someone needed help, he would help. And he was there just to get him to the end, whatever that took.
Isn't it unusual how we do that? I say we, the collective we. Even when there's someone in charge, there are others who think they should be in charge. And I assume, Diane, that this happened during the course of the expedition and, as you said, is depicted in the play?
Oh, yeah, definitely. There are many times when there conflicts arise, leader butts heads with other people in the expedition who thinks things should be handled differently. And that's what I like about Sumner's role as well, as sort of the mediator, the arbitrator, or the stand back and observe and try to make things work for everybody.
People argue all the time. I can imagine. I imagine Lewis and Clark probably had some big arguments themselves along the way.
And Diane's been very good about letting us experiment with how we would interpret different scenes and trying things different ways. And so we've found some great ideas.
It's interesting, I think, that it was depicted by actual events. But then I imagine you also have your own twist on things. That's dramatic license, and we all appreciate that.
Yeah, absolutely. We have been having fun the last 5 weeks, trying out different ways, discovering that there's a lot of humor in this play because of the relationships among the group, and I think the actors who are portraying them, you know, have formed relationships such that we can shorthand communicate. You know, these are 10 people who traveled on 4 boats, and so sometimes breaks up into those 4 factions. Sometimes there's a mutiny, as it were, and there's some infighting or possible conspiracies to take things in a different direction. So, we've had fun exploring how to interpret those conflicts and portray them in a way that's relevant societally as well as portrayed humorously.
Nadine seems to have done a lot of research into her character.
Yes.
Now, what kinds of things did you learn? I sort of asked this before, but
sure.
What was there things that surprised you about what you learned about him?
You know, I was surprised by how everyone on that was hired for this trip, or at least brought along, how they didn't really have the experience. They didn't have a lot of boat experience or river experience, and they all just jumped on and went. I mean, that's what a crazy concept.
Was there a purpose? I know in the case of Lewis and Clark, which people in this area are familiar with, they were commissioned by the President of the United States to explore this territory. What about this particular exhibition? Is there a history behind it?
Yes, it is the same. It was from the government. It was commissioned by the government to kind of map the last unmapped area of the country. They did not know how the river went down to make the Grand Canyon, and even though people lived there at the time, there were some Mormon settlements, and of course the natives were there, but it was not mapped yet for the government.
So they didn't know where it was going to come out, so to speak, things like that?
Yeah. That works.
Yeah. Well, you never know. When you're originally exploring things, you don't know what you're going to find.
Yeah, they really did not know what they were up against. They did the best they could, but it was brutal.
Was there a native, I believe there is today, a Native American tribe living at the bottom of the canyon?
Yeah, the Ute tribe was there. And
was in those days?
Yes. Nowadays, I couldn't tell you what was down there.
I'm not sure.
It's mostly tourists today.
I
know that much. I know people that have done the hike down there. It's a long hike, and you have to camp and all of that. And I believe a tribe still does live down there.
Yeah, but that is one of the scenes that is integral to the play, is that they seek help from a Ute tribe. How that is received is is fictional, but it's very humorous as to how the Utes try to assist a few white guys who
they probably got
need
a good,
help.
They probably got a good laugh out of that. Actually.
Exactly, and that's exactly how we are depicting that scene. That goes back to the themes that we were talking about. If we were in a matriarchy, would we handle things the same way with power and with our leadership roles? But also, would we have the same capacity for conquest, discovering things that we say we discovered, but natives have been here for tens of thousands, 10,000 years, 15,000 years. Would we have the same capacity for racism, genocide, wiping out entire civilizations? I don't know. But those are the deeper themes within the play. So the scene that takes place at the Ute, with the Utes, it was one of my favorites.
The show opens on Friday, the 13th of March. I know what you're thinking. Didn't we have one of those last month? Yes, we did. I think we did. On Friday, the 13th at 7:30 p.m., performances continue on Saturday, the 14th at 7:30 p.m. and continues on Sunday the 15th at 2 o'clock p.m., a matinee. Then the next weekend as well, Friday the 20th at 7:30, Saturday the 21st at 7:30, and wraps up on Sunday the 22nd of March with a 2 o'clock p.m. matinee at the home now of the Bell Road Barn, the David Theater at Park University, 8700 River Park Drive, Parkville, Missouri. The number to call for more information is 816-587-0218, or you can hop online to bellroadbarn.org. We're speaking with Diane, the director, Nadine, one of the actors. Let's talk about the people that they're portraying and the byplay between all of that. I assume that there were different factions. As Diane pointed out, there was four boats. So there might have been a faction per boat, or there might have been a leadership faction, or there might have been a I like him, but I don't like him kind of faction. But tell me about some of the characters and how they fit into that story.
Yeah, so the leader of the expedition is John Wesley Powell, portrayed by Lauren Pope. Also in that boat with Powell were Sumner, played by Nadine, and also William Dunn, portrayed by Heather Ives. So these three head the group of 10. So the other three boats have your cook and your map maker. You have a couple of soldiers and then the adventurers. So there are different personalities within each boat, and of course the different conflicts that arise from having all the different personalities.
So it actually broke down by factions then, I suppose.
A lot of the times.
It's interesting how we do that. Why do we break down by groups or factions like that, especially in something which had to have been as arduous as this journey had to have been?
Absolutely. And I think people gravitate towards others that are like them just in general. And when you have to put those groups into boats and distinctly to separate them, it becomes more obvious.
Were you involved with getting this play performed, or did you not know about it or was told about it?
This play, Men on Boats, was selected by the Bell Road Barn Players as part of their 2019-2020 season, and I was encouraged to apply to direct it, and I'm very, very fortunate that they asked me to come on board.
Now, you've directed for them before. Wasn't it a series of one acts, I believe?
In 2018, I did their first Awkward Christmas, or at least directed three of the short plays. That's actually how I met Nadine, who auditioned for that. A group of short plays, all local playwrights, all themed around awkward Christmases. So there are about 12 to 15 short plays, and I directed three of them.
Well, the barn, the Bell Road Barn Players, you have to add that bell on there, has had a storied history. It began, of course, people say, well, why do they call them the Bell Road? Because there is a Bell Road in Parkville, and Jenkin David, the professor of theater, I believe, if I'm correct about that, at Park University, that's where he lived, in Parkville. And he wanted something for first his children and then his students to do during the summer. So they performed in his barn on Bell Road. So it all makes sense, really. They later moved on to Riverside. Mr. David had passed on. His wife was elderly. I remember meeting her. And we actually had rehearsals at the barn site, although they were no longer doing shows at the barn site. But they moved to Riverside and did shows there. And you'll remember the big flood that came to Riverside and took out the building that they were in. And they then moved to the campus where they probably should have been all along, because that's where he taught and did shows himself at the theater. I don't know. Do you like the space? Is it big enough for this show? Sounds like you probably need a lot of space.
It's actually a very, very nice space. Theater seats about 150 or so. But the stage is great shape, great design for the actions that we have to portray. Everything's very stylized. Obviously, we don't have rushing rapids, but we have indications of boats, indications of canyon walls, indications of the different landscapes that that they get to visit. So it will all be done through the use of creative sound design, scenic design, and projections design. My good friend Jennifer Cooper is doing the scenic and projections design and has gone with the theme of telling stories the way women traditionally have told stories throughout several decades through the use of quilts. So there is an element of the design that is indicative or styled like quilts. So the canyon walls can sometimes be used, created with use of fabric, creative use of fabric. The boats will be designed that way. So, yeah, we have, I like to think that we have a very, very universal design through it that's cohesive and that really helps reinforce the themes in the story.
And isn't it interesting, if not ironic, that the traditional play, Quilters, is often done by the Bell Road Barn. It's one of the shows they do on a regular basis. So it only fits in to the theme of their shows.
Full circle.
That's right. What about the costuming and the props? A little rough on you, perhaps?
No, it's actually very comfortable. It's something, you know, pants and a shirt and a jacket to protect you from the sun. So it's nothing like I would have worn in that time period, all corsets and all that. It's good old explorer outfits.
Oh, I'm sure. Of course, an expedition of all men. The language might get kind of salty. What about this script?
There's a little bit of salt in the language. Yeah, I'd say so. So it's something for to be aware of.
Is it a different attitude when you're playing him? You would probably not usually do something like that in a show, Nadine. But this show, you have to.
Yeah, you know, it flows very naturally. Everything works. There's not very many moments where you think, oh, that's such a dude thing to do. It just really works the way it's written. And I think it's surprising, and I think you lose the fact that, hey, that's a woman playing a man's role, and you just absorb yourself in the story more, which is really nice.
Do you play it as if, this is a strange question, I know, do you play it as if you were a man?
I play it as if we're telling a story, really. Okay. I think that despite the fact that I would refer to another character as him, or he did this, or he did that, I think that it does not hinder anything, and it actually works better.
Yeah, actually, rough around the edges men would probably use terms like, that's so-and-so.
And it also goes to the fact that we are addressing gender roles. The fact that we are, it's a cast of 10 women portraying men, we made the decision to just play it as ourselves and not attempt to adopt any stereotypical masculine behaviors, masculine movement. It's all designed to be universal.
The show is Men on Boats. It's four boats, as we've explained, but it's played by an all-female cast as they travel down the Colorado River and around, this is my guess, 1869, yes. Something like that. And that goes through the Grand Canyon, if you've ever been there. And you look at the magnificence of that canyon, and you think that this relatively small Colorado River, over millions of years, carved out this Grand Canyon. So it was an expedition that probably a lot of people wanted to do and go through there. And they will be playing at with an all-female cast, I might add, at the Bell Road Barn on two weekends, March 13th, a Friday, Saturday the 14th, also a night, and Sunday the 15th, a matinee at 2:00 p.m. Then again the next weekend as well, Friday the 20th at 7:30, Saturday the 21st at 7:30, and a matinee on Sunday the 22nd at 2:00 p.m. at the Bell Road Barn, playing in Park University's David Theater, named after the man I spoke of earlier, Jenkin David, at Park University, 8700 River Park Drive, Parkville, Missouri. The number to call for more information is 816-587-0218, or you could hop online at bellroadbarn.org. Any quick, is it Highway 9?
Yeah, take Highway 9.
Take Highway 9 and northwest from Kansas City. Do you still go by the water plant, or has all that changed since I've been up there?
A little bit. If you take it, you could see it one way, well, not the other.
You take the old Broadway Bridge, you go past Municipal Airport, then you make that left when you get to downtown Kansas City, Missouri, and head on Highway 9 to go to Parkville.
That's it. Yep.
And it's right off of Highway 9, as I recall.
Yes, it is.
Yeah. Yep, very obvious. You'll see it.
Okay. Thanks so much for being with us. If you've ever wondered how this would work, you know, if, as Diane spoke earlier, if the gender roles were a little reversed, how would that turn out? You'll get to see, perhaps, and give them your input after the show on their expedition, Men on Boats. Running through Sunday, March 22nd at the Bell Road Barn Theater on the campus of Park University. Diane Mulland, the director, and Nadine Civitella, who plays the role of John Colton Sumner in the Bell Road Barn Theater production of Men on Boats, played, of course, by women. It's one of those things you have to see to understand, I guess. Thanks so much for being with us.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
We're going to take a brief break. Then when we return, we're going to talk about another performance in another place, that new repertory theater I've had several interviews with over the winter. They're going to be on next when we return. You're listening to the Arts Magazine radio program right here on KKFI, 90.1 FM.
Hi, I'm Russ Simmons with Freeze Frame, KKFI's weekly look at the newest cinematic fare at your local theaters. Due to the fact that most of our local cinemas are temporarily closing in reaction to the coronavirus outbreak, this week's Freeze Frame will focus on brand new movies that are available to stream on home streaming services. Self-Made, inspired by the life of Madam C.J. Walker, is a three-hour Netflix miniseries about America's first self-made female millionaire. Oscar winner Octavia Spencer takes the title role of the woman who used her tenacity and sales skills to build a business empire of hair care products for African-American women. Based on a book by Walker's granddaughter, the story focuses on the formidable personal and societal obstacles that Ms. Walker had to overcome in the early part of the 20th century. Spencer is ideally cast in the title role. This enlightening and well-produced drama falters only when it indulges in some fantasy scenes that are artificial and unnecessary. Blow the Man Down is a wicked pitch-black mystery new on Amazon. It's a thriller that exposes the unseemly underbelly of a small, sleepy fishing village in coastal Maine. Sophie Lowe and Morgan Saylor play sisters who unwittingly uncover the town's dark secrets when one of them kills a man in self-defense, and then they attempt to cover it up. The style and tone are very similar to the work of the Coen brothers, so if their comically dark vision appeals to you, then Blow the Man Down is right up your alley. Pete Davidson from Saturday Night Live stars in the Hulu comedy Big Time Adolescence, the story of a charismatic but irresponsible man in his 20s who has the emotional maturity of a juvenile. Appropriately, his best friend is an impressionable 16-year-old played by Griffin Gluck. The duo gets into trouble through casual drug dealing. Big Time Adolescence is slight, but it's an often amusing cautionary tale. Well, that's it for this edition of Freeze Frame. Until next time, I'm Russ Simmons with Fox 4 and KKFI-FM.
Tell your smart speaker, play KKFI, and enjoy the programming you love. KKFI, wherever you are.
I'm Wendy, your Girl Friday, inviting you to join me Friday afternoons, 3 to 5 for Edged in Blue, that rockin' little blues show with guitar-driven, vinyl-spinning, and harp-bending tunes. See you Friday.
And welcome back. You are listening to an encore presentation of the Arts Magazine show. Yes, all the shows are shut down right now, but as soon as they get back going again, we'll start having our interviews again. But in the meantime, we hope you'll enjoy this encore presentation of Arts Magazine. And welcome back to the Arts Magazine show right here on KKFI 90.1 FM, your community radio station. Right here in Kansas City, I'm Michael Hogue, your host. We're going to journey over to the West Bottoms now. That's where Kansas City's newest repertory theater, the Forge Repertory Theater, now calls itself home. And with us to tell us all about their latest production, The Secret in the Wings, is the director of the show and the co-artistic director of Forge Repertory Theater as well, Todd Lanker is his name. Well, welcome back to the show, Todd.
Thanks so much, Michael.
Glad to have you once again. And he brought along one of his actresses in the show, Stephanie Stevens, in the ensemble. But then again, she said the whole cast was part of the ensemble. She's a dancer and a choreographer. Tell the audience a little something about yourself, Stephanie.
Sure. I've been performing in Kansas City for quite a while now, doing various plays, musicals, and I choreograph and dance as well. So I'm sure, and do film and commercial.
Yeah. We may ask more about that in a little bit on the show. But first, let's turn to Todd. He is the director of this show and the co-artistic director. For those who haven't heard much about the Forge Repertory Theater, tell us a little bit about yourself and the unique concept you've come up with, which is different from some other theater groups.
Yeah, we're Forge is founded by six people who have been working to varying degrees in the theater community in Kansas City for quite a while. And we sort of saw an opportunity fill two little holes. And there has been a lot of development in terms of donation-only theater or pay-what-you-can type of theater. But we were interested in taking that a step further and adding an audience educational aspect to it, because I think what gets lost in a lot of that is what is actually the fiscal cost of making theater. And I think we don't really know. And I certainly, before I started producing, didn't know what it really costs. So we adopted a system formed by a theater in New York called Flux Theater, called the Open Book Living Ticket System. And basically what it is, the open book means that all of our budgets are open all the time. We update them regularly. And if you ever want to know how much we're spending on things, go and look how much we have budgeted for items and where donations, where resources are being allocated. The living ticket aspect of it is really exciting. Basically, to get a ticket to our show, you just reserve one, and that's all there is to it. We do suggested donation levels based on three versions of these open book budgets. The first is covering our baseline expenses, just getting ourselves into the black. The middle donation level is based on what if we paid everybody minimum wage, all of the artists who work there, all of our technicians, all of our staff. What if we paid people minimum wage? The third is if we paid everybody living wage, which is really our goal. Because that's kind of the flip side of not necessarily understanding the fiscal cost of creating theater and art, is that artists are grossly undercompensated. And doing the math, even working at the professional theaters around the town and around the country, if you were to work for under a contract, under a professional contract for 45 weeks out of the year, you would still be right around the poverty line. And it's a shocking thing to know. And it kind of, I think, reflects both a level of misunderstanding about the costs. With that, a casual undervaluing of the art. So we want to have that educational element, but we also want to make sure that art is open to all, and that our theater is open to anybody who wants to come, regardless of financial situation. So there is no financial barrier to entry. But if you're interested in donating, we have these kind of three levels that we recommend you look at to take that next step.
As I recall, it was the same core group of people that were going to be performing in each one of your three shows that you had coming up for the season.
Yes, that's the other niche that we felt like could really use filling, is the development of what we call emerging artists, emerging early career or young artists. And we kind of wanted an opportunity to take them under our wing a little bit and give them a safe space to explore and develop creatively, without the constant pressure of I have to do so well in this show, and I have to just not make any waves and not ask any questions, otherwise people will think I'm not any good and they're never going to hire me again. So we have hired a group of four actors for the entire season, and they have been contracted for all three of our shows we did a series of sort of professional development workshops with them. For each show, they're mentored by an established artist that is in that show that can kind of walk them through the process, answer any questions, and help them kind of work through their craft. And then will hopefully be a resource as they launch themselves into a professional and more permanent career that they can call on and that they can really kind of build this community. So kind of hearkening back to the old way actors were trained, you learned by doing. You got hired onto a company. You learned by watching the people who had been doing it forever, talking to them over drinks after the show, and kind of taking ownership of your own growth. And so those are sort of, I would say, our two big unique things is the Living Ticket open book, and then the Emerging Artist Rep Company.
Now, you opened up December, was your first show?
Yes. This is our very first season. We had our first show in December, which is On the Verge, or the Geography of Yearning. I always want to say learning, but that's not right. Yearning, which was a wonderful experience that we definitely grew and learned a lot from, as any young endeavor. Every step we take, my kind of personal motto is, we'll fail better next time.
Did it go as well as you expected that it would go?
It did go well. We learned a lot. We learned a lot about just what it takes to produce the thing with this team of six people who are all wearing a lot of different hats. So I'm co-artistic director. I'm also the technical director. I was also the scenic designer for that one. And then I was also working as an actor down the street at the Unicorn. So doing a lot of things, and we're learning a lot about overcommitting ourselves and
sure.
And how we need to sort of structure ourselves and focus. But it was a wonderful learning experience that we gained a lot from.
The current show that's, and I don't have any dates for you here, but you can fill that in for me, is about to go up. It is called The Secret in the Wings. So it's the same basic cast as did your previous show, right?
With some additions. Yeah, we've got three members of our Emerging Artist Rep Company that are in this production. As far as dates, our first preview was this last Thursday, March 5th, and we will run through March 22nd. For specific show times and dates, check out forgerep.org. on your local computer.
It's a good way to do it, of course. Forgerep.org. And the number to call for more information as well, 816-226-7154. We're speaking with Todd Lanker, director and co-artistic director of the Forge Repertory Theater, and Stephanie Stevens. Well, I suppose we should go back and let Todd talk about the show, which he is directing, of course.
I am.
About the show. Let's hear a little bit about the show, The Secret in the Wings. That's very mysterious.
It is very mysterious. It continues to be. The Secret in the Wings was written and developed by Mary Zimmerman at Looking Glass Theater in Chicago, who then went on to win a Tony, be awarded a MacArthur Genius Grant, much for her work in Metamorphosis. But her focus, and I've really been drawn to and inspired by her work, is on ensemble-generated and image-driven theater, kind of taking the idea that there are layers of audience experience. One of them is the dialogue. One of them is the sound. One of them is the costumes. One of them is the set. There are all these different layers of experience. And if we can work each layer individually, we can have a richer, more immersive experience of theater. So something that gets neglected a lot is the image. So there's a lot of non-literal images going on, and a lot of imaginative symbolism that's used in not just in this, but in Mary Zimmerman's work across the board. So that's where it came from. It's a play. The short version of it is a young girl is left for the evening by her parents with a next door neighbor babysitter who is an ogre. And he has a tail, and comes in smoking, and just a not a great babysitter, one would seem. And he starts to tell her these series of stories.
Sounds like he's a literal ogre.
He is a literal ogre.
Okay.
And he tells her this series of stories over the course of the evening that she and he get sort of drawn into and engage with. And Yeah, that's sort of the short, no spoilers version.
Well, that gives you some flexibility then.
Right? It sure does.
Because if you don't like one of the stories he tells,
hey,
it's like the weather. Hang in there.
Absolutely.
Something's going to come along in a few minutes,
for sure.
Probably.
For sure.
Sure, and that'll be happening, of course, at the Black Box Theater. I should give that address again. 1060 Union Avenue. If you MapQuest things, you need that zip code, 64101. It's in the West Bottoms. And that has become your home now. It's a Black Box Theater, but as I recall from driving by, it's a white building.
It is, shockingly, yes.
Black inside.
That's located in the West Bottoms at 1060 Union Avenue. If you MapQuest things, you need that zip code, and it's 64101. ForgeRep.org. Let's get into it a little more. Stephanie, obviously, is probably... Are you in all of these story scenarios,
yes,
Stephanie?
Yes, to some varying degree, yes. Pretty much all of them. We are all involved in all of them, kind of telling the story, being various parts of the story. Some of the main characters, some just kind of making images and creating the atmosphere.
Does it all relate to a central theme, perhaps?
There is kind of a central storyline going through. I think the main thing being maybe what we fear most is maybe what needs our love the most. That's kind of like the theme, I think, that kind of ties it all together.
Well, and some would say what we love the most, we could also fear the most.
That's true. That's very true. All kind of cyclical.
Tell me about... And we don't want to give away any spoilers, but some of the scenarios of the stories and how you particularly, as an actress, fit into that.
Sure. I guess one of the bigger ones is Alalera. We're all little girls kind of throughout, and kind of getting to play that is interesting. And then it comes back in the second half, and we may be a little older, but still girls kind of dealing with our coming of age thing and how it relates to the story that is Alalera and how that makes us feel in that moment. And if you'll come to the show, you'll see what I'm talking about.
Okay.
And then I think one of the most beautiful stories with imagery wise is The Seven Swans. It's just really beautiful. It's done in an interesting way. There's a lot going on, but you, I don't know, like, I don't want to give away too much.
Yeah, no, it's, and all of these stories are sort of...
Well-known.
Yeah, yeah. They're either Grimm's or sort of adjacent, lesser-known fairy tales, or folk tales. So the Seven Swans, also called Silent for Seven
yes.
Years, and... it does involve a lot of movement, and I think there's a section that's just about 6 minutes long that there's no dialogue in, and it's just movement and image and music. And
but it's definitely not something you'll get bored with. There's just so much going on and so much, like, yeah.
Does your work as a dancer help you in a scene like that? Body movement interpretation.
Yeah, for sure, being aware of my body and how to move and how to kind of movement kind of evokes like feeling too and different things, character too. So yeah, for sure.
I remember during our study of Grimm's fairy tales, and the name really was Grimm, but it also described the focus of the stories. The children's tales that we often see today were
nothing
much.
Like it.
Dare I say,
down.
Mean, kind of a mean aspect to it.
Yeah.
But that's what was done in that time.
Yeah.
And we have to take it with that understanding. Do we know much about Mary Zimmerman and why she wrote this and why she wrote it the way that she wrote it?
I think a lot of her work, and Mary, if you're listening, I'm sorry if I say anything wrong, but a lot of her work is based on old material. So Metamorphosis, which is the one that she won her Tony for and one of her best known ones, is based on Ovid's Metamorphosis and kind of the collection of mythology from, I'm going to feel like such a fool if it's Greek. But she also has one, based on, the Odyssey, and she has one based on Arabian Nights. So she's drawn to, or seems to be drawn to kind of these old stories that are part of our cultural mythology, and cultural experience. And I think, an ongoing theme of taking those things that are sort of familiar and feel like, oh, I know what that is, and twisting them slightly so that we can uncover the truth that's really at the heart of them and that has made them last through the centuries. And I would say that that seems to be an ongoing theme in her work that I've noticed. So I think that that really goes along with this. I think they found, as Looking Glass was developing this for the first time, I want to say in the late 80s, that they found these fairy tales to be that. We have this idea of fairy tales that we're kind of able to dismiss easily because we're like, oh, I know what fairy tales are. But taking these and reinvesting in them and to find those kernels of truth and those shining points of the human experience that they could really explore in this unique way.
You know, like so many things, there's hidden meanings and there's double meanings, mm-hmm. and things are just symbolic of other things.
Yeah.
And she must be a real fan of that.
Yeah, each story in this play, all these Grimm stories, they're all told in a different way. Some through singing, some through more visual, some kind of third person kind of way. It's a unique way of telling each story. So you're getting something different with each story too. It's told in a different way. So maybe someone's going to react differently to each story just because of the way it's told.
Is this something that you want to, not necessarily this theme, but doing unique takeoffs on things? It seems that's what you've done so far.
Yeah, and that's really, I'm always interested in fresh perspectives and things. I love classical theater. I love Shakespeare and hate Shakespeare because of exactly that it's something that we kind of is very easy to write off and dismiss, and you know, and one of my favorites is Romeo and Juliet, and like, oh well, you know, it's just kids who are blah blah blah, but it loses by dismissing it like that. We lose touch on what is the real truth of these people who are just trying to do good and trying to do what they think is right. And and I'm going to choke myself up, but in Romeo and Juliet, two kids who are trying to be grown up.
Yeah, that's a good point.
And are really, really trying. And I think if we dismiss it as, well, they're just stupid kids being kids, then we lose that thing of, well, aren't we all trying to be grown up? Aren't we all trying to be taken seriously and trying to do the good thing even when it's hard? And aren't we all failing at it? Just like they are, and I think that so connecting to these broader and older ideas and recontextualizing them is definitely, short answer, yes, Michael.
Yeah. It was good though.
Shakespeare also shows us how in the instance of Romeo and Juliet, how our hate and how that can be over-consuming, mm-hmm. and the long-term damage and even permanent long-time damage can do to something that could be so beautiful.
Yeah,
That's one of the reasons I think.
Or how fears hold us back from me finding that too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's why it's been done so many times. But getting back to George.
Anyway, back to this play.
But you like to do these unique themes, obviously. Is that going to carry over in the final play of your first season?
Yeah, well, the final play of our season is an adaptation of The Grapes of Wrath, of John Steinbeck's classic American novel, The Grapes of Wrath. And when we're choosing material as a Forge group, something that we are always looking for is new perspectives. So we're going to try to look at it, and we try to approach that in the way that we cast it, the way that we interpret it, the way that we stage it, or just the material that we choose, looking for these fresh perspectives and new ideas. And so I'm going to be co-directing Grapes of Wrath with one of our other core members, Ryan Fortney, who directed On the Verge. And something that Ryan and I have been really interested in is this idea of, well, it's not specifically a 1930s story. It really is. It's set in 1930s, but it's a story of now. It's a story of 20 years ago. It's a story of 50 years from now. This idea of there's been a cataclysm And there's a family who's trying to survive and is trying to push through and is trying to find hope in the midst of hopeless circumstances. And I think that is a theme that is relevant throughout history. And Steinbeck said it in the 30s because that was kind of the most immediate. And we're definitely being inspired by the time period that the novel was set in, but would love to expand it so that we can not dismiss it as a piece of historical museum theater, but as a really a piece of relevant, what do we do about families who find themselves in hopeless situations and are seeking hope somewhere else, and they get there and they find that it's not what they want. And I'm trying not to get political here, Michael. That's what I'm really trying to do. But I think that is a universal theme that we really want to explore, and hopefully in a way that feels both connected to the source material and connected to our audience right now in 2020.
Yeah. The Dust Bowl, while it seems so long ago, was a real cataclysm, as
Absolutely.
You put it, for those people back then.
Absolutely.
It was just as real as any disaster that would happen today was. There are comparisons, and that's the way you really need to look at it. Mm-hmm. That's going to happen how long?
Not very long.
I shouldn't give dates, because obviously today I've proven I'm not good at that. So
it's going to spring that on me, Michael. The Grapes of Wrath will actually start performances April 30th and run through May 17th.
So each of the original four people will have roles in that, and extra people may come along.
They certainly will. It's a cast of 15, so there will be a lot of extra people in the Grapes of Wrath.
Sure, but there are symbolic things to learn from each of them, as well as being entertained.
Absolutely.
I'm sure you want Forge Theater to be known as an entertaining theater.
Absolutely.
Not just a learning experience.
Yes. That's right. That is so right.
And the show is entertaining too. You'll hopefully laugh at some very poignant parts.
Sure, of course. And that'll take place, as he said, in April. But if you're interested in The Secret and the Wings, hearing about all of these stories that have meaning in their own ways, and you can only tell that by seeing them yourself. Shows continue on Thursday the 12th, just a few days from now, Friday the 13th, Saturday the 14th, Sunday the 15th, which would be the Sunday afternoon matinee. The others are at 7:30 p.m., and a special Monday performance on the 16th at 7:30, then Thursday the 19th, Friday the 20th, Saturday the 21st, all 7:30 evening performances, and concludes on the 22nd with a Sunday matinee at 2 o'clock p.m. at the Forge Repertory Theater and the Black Box Theater, located at 1060 Union Avenue in the West Bottoms. Any brief directions you want to give? What's the easiest way for them to get there?
Google Maps. Yeah.
Well, I didn't mean to surprise you.
No.
Does one street work best? Like the street that goes down to Kemper Arena. Is that a good one to take?
Yeah, it's...
Is it best to go from the 20th?
The best way to go, I come up 35 from the south. So what I do is I take the 169 exit, and rather than heading down towards the downtown airport, if you just stay to the right at that intersection and go underneath the bridge and around to the left, it'll wing you down into the correct area of the West Bottoms.
You'll recognize the white building, even though it's called a Black Box Theater. And that's just the way it is in theater. I can't tell you anything more about it. I want to thank you both for coming
and
telling us about the Forge Repertory Theater, the unique concept they have. If you have other questions about that, by all means, contact them. You can go online to forgerep.org or call the number that they have, 816-226-7154. And it is a unique concept. Well, we're all waiting to see if that's going to work well for you come the future.
You and me both.
I'm sure you do. Thank you so much for coming. Todd Lanker, the director of The Secret in the Wings, and he's also the co-artistic director of Forge Repertory Theater, and Stephanie Stevens. I'm a member of the ensemble. She's a dancer, a choreographer, and an actor as well. thank you so much.
Thank you.
For being with us. The Jazz Insider, Sam Wiseman, is coming up next. He has some great jazz to play for you. In true KKFI tradition, we'll have jazz from 1 to 3. Then we'll have the blues from 3 to 6. Right here on your community radio station, 90.1 FM KKFI, Kansas City's community radio. So until next we meet, ladies and gentlemen, at that cross in the road, I'm Michael Hogue. We'll see you next time.